Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody, for a very special morning podcast that we're recording here on the morning of October 17th, 2022. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, a pair of Hoops HD regulars, David Griggs and John Tytel with us, but our very special guest, among other many other credentials he has, he is the chairman of the 2022-23 NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Committee, the vice president, let me get the title correct here, the vice president for intercollegiate athletics at Bradley University, Chris Reynolds. Chris, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
For those that may not know you, I thought maybe we'd start by asking a little bit about your background. I know that, among other things, you played for Indiana and had to play the Duke team the game after the famous Leitner shot, among other things, correct?
Yeah, it's been a great journey for me personally and professionally. As you mentioned, had an opportunity to go to Indiana University, receive an outstanding world-class education and play basketball there for Coach Bob Knight. And it was a wonderful experience for me. And then had an opportunity to go to law school and finish that in 96. And then started my journey in intercollegiate athletics. First stop was an internship at the NCAA national office. At the time, they were in Overland Park, Kansas. And then from there, a brief stop at Michigan State, then Western Michigan University, University of Notre Dame, back to Indiana in a senior level role, and then to Northwestern, and then had the good fortune of being able to come back home to Peoria, Illinois, and lead Bradley Athletics.
Yeah. So one of the things that's sort of with the Leitner shot that's been lost is that for about 30 seconds, it looked like Kentucky and Indiana were going to play in the Final Four. And in the early mid-90s, that would have been a huge deal. Do you think the Midwest would have survived, or would it have just kind of collapsed on itself?
Wow. You know, I will say I wasn't prepared for that question, but I will say it's been 30 years ago, you know, and, yeah, and it's amazing. It seems like it was yesterday because we see that clip and we remember, obviously, those Duke teams early on, and that shot will continue on for a lifetime. But, man, it was 30 years ago. It's a long time ago. Great basketball at that time, as is now. And college basketball has just been wonderful, and I'm just fortunate to be a part of it.
Yeah, and at Bradley there, it's been, you know, last 2 years, not so much, but for a couple of years in a row, the team that nobody could beat in Arch Madness at the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament, your school put together a couple of great runs to make the NCAA tournament the last few years here.
It's been a great run, a lot of fun. We've enjoyed it. We still continue to enjoy it. And what's really neat is we just have terrific young people, terrific coaches, a great staff, and we're enjoying the ride.
Yeah. So kind of getting started, one of the things I love about college basketball is the way the regular season feeds into the NCAA tournament. I kind of wish more people kind of understood just how important the regular season is. And whenever I hear people talking about expanding the tournament and giving more teams a chance, I want to say that to them, like, don't you realize like how great November, December, January, February, and March? I think we all know the answer to this, but from the benefit of our audience, on November 7th, all 12 of you are watching right out of the gate. There's things happening that night that impact the selections. Is that correct?
Absolutely. From the first game until the final game that happens during the conference tournaments, every game will be evaluated and looked at and scrutinized and talked about. And we're looking forward to the season starting.
Yeah. Sorry, John. Yet. John, did we lose you? All right. Well, all right. I think we lost John off our screen. So we'll try to get back here.
This is top of the line production here. But it sounds like you've been in sort of like the two different worlds. We don't use the term mid-major here. We refer to them as under the radar schools. I just think mid-major, that's almost kind of a bad word. But going from the Big Ten and sort of power schools into the Missouri Valley, it seems like if you're in a power conference, you're going to have opportunities built in at the quality wins. If you're a top 40, top 50 caliber team from the Missouri Valley, the Ohio Valley, one of the 22 leagues that typically, not always, but typically only sends one team. Your season plays out in the sense that you have 6 weeks at the beginning to get the kinds of wins that would impress the committee if you were lucky enough to schedule them right and get those opportunities. And then even then, they're sort of under unfavorable terms. And then if you do get them, instead of getting the kinds of wins that bolster your resume, it's like those types of schools feel like they're just playing to hang on for dear life every week. And as you know, in the Missouri Valley, it's hard to win on the road there. In the Mid-American Conference, it's hard to go to Ohio and Kent and Akron. And even in CUSA, like, it's hard to win at UAB. It's hard to win at North Texas. It's hard to win at Louisiana Tech. Those might not be tournament caliber teams, but beating them on their floor is arguably harder than beating someone that's mid-level SEC that might be 3-7 or 4-7 on the road total. How do you sort of, that's quite a bit of nuance. How do you measure the merit from one resume that came from a completely different place than, say, somebody that's playing a Power Five type of schedule?
I would say the short answer is very carefully, right? And that's why they're committee members, because it's not just punching a bunch of stats into a computer and something being spit out, but we all have our own subjective minds and we're all looking at the same data, but we have to evaluate it as individuals and talk about it collectively. But it's not easy. And so we spend a great deal of discussing these things and in conversation, beginning November 7th throughout the course of the year, but it takes a lot of conversation and dialogue. And so, and that's the fun of it. That's the beauty of it. To be on the committee and have this opportunity is certainly an honor and a privilege, but it's a lot of work. And we spend a lot of time discussing the very question that you asked.
Yeah, Chris, you being on the committee and now being the chairman and having served 5 years on it, obviously, you served through the nightmare that we all went through with COVID and the cancellation and the following season, which was still crazy. I think, can you reflect back on going through all of that while on the committee?
Well, first of all, I don't think it was a nightmare to Baylor. They had a pretty good run.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And it was a fantastic term. It was just different, obviously. Just from a fan perspective in person. But to be able to pull that off, I will say, was phenomenal. And I'm not saying it because I was on the committee and I had a hand in it. Credit to the NCAA staff for all the planning and preparation. And we certainly assisted and gave some guidance to the process. But it was an honor to be a part of that process, to be in Indianapolis in the same hotel for 29 days. I mean, it's just things you'll never forget. And yeah, it was special to be able to pull that off and something I'll certainly never forget.
And I think we got John back. John.
We do. Sorry about that, Chris. I appreciate you so much for joining us today. You mentioned the in-person experience. I heard that you prefer to watch games in person rather than on TV. Obviously, it's more exciting, but you get to watch less of them because you can only be in one place at one time. So what do you gain from watching a game in person that you wouldn't get from watching it on TV?
Well, I think you can look at that both ways. What do you lose by watching it in person, right? And so I think that question can be asked both ways. You gain a little bit, you lose a little bit. Certainly when you're watching on television, As you might imagine, you have the opportunity to watch three or four games at one time, flip channels, listen to the commentators talk about the teams and some of the research that they've done. And it's just good to hear during the course of a game some of that dialogue back and forth, some of the analysis. And so you gain that from watching on television, quite frankly. As I mentioned, the opportunity to be able to flip through and watch several games at one time is certainly helpful and something that we as committee members benefit from. And so that's very helpful. And then in person, obviously anytime you can watch a game in person, it helps. But I think, again, you lose some things as well. So I don't think there is necessarily a great benefit from watching it in person versus television. I think there's plus and minuses both ways.
Well, Chris, how many games do you think you're going to be getting to this year outside of Bradley University's games?
You know, really can't. I really haven't put a whole lot of thought. You know, I haven't like booked flights and mapped out an itinerary or anything like that. And so it'll be a week to week situation for me, and we'll just see how it goes. But certainly what's great about this process and what's great about this experience is it's just not me. We have 11 other committee members that'll be dialed in as well. And so collectively we're able to tackle it together.
Yeah. Let me just follow up on that with the 11 other committee members. And I think maybe this is something that maybe gets lost, but you haven't been on the committee now 5 years. Do you find that what the committee as a whole kind of values has changed over time just because the committee members change, maybe a new perspective comes in? Or do you find it's really been consistent over the 5 years what is truly valued the most on resumes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say certainly you have individuals that may have been around the game longer, maybe, or maybe they have brought certain experiences that maybe a new committee member doesn't have. But I would say for the most part, it's been really consistent because the conversation is so rich. And what's been great is we're together 12 months a year, and we have dialogue and conversations amongst each other. And so we get to know each other quite well. And so start November 7th, when we do have conversations, even though you may have two new committee members, we've had so many conversations. It just seems as though everything just really falls in place because you do have to work as a unit.
We kind of, like, as a website, we try and give coverage to everybody. In fact, like once a week, one of our weekly podcasts is called Under the Radar, and it is specifically for the 22 conferences that typically only get one bid. Would you have any advice for a school? I know that you say that there's, you know, an attempt to schedule. I've heard that thrown around, that that's part of the criteria. Unfortunately, you don't have the benefit of knowing exactly how good a team is going to be when you do schedule them. And even if you do, you might have a hard time getting that game. I think Stephen F. Austin a few years ago put an ad on Basketball Travelers that said, "We will play anywhere for nothing." I don't know how you can make more of an attempt to schedule than that. And they still couldn't fill it out. For those types of teams that might be inside the bubble caliber teams, top 40 caliber teams, but don't have the built-in strength of their conference, what kind of advice would you have for a school like that that's trying to put together a tournament resume?
Yeah, I think you just said it with your last few words. It is the resume that we look at. And certainly there are challenges that come along with scheduling, but we can only evaluate what we see in a resume. And certainly, as you reference, the attempt to schedule, you just really never know how it plays out. You can think a team has a chance to be pretty good when you contract that game in April, the spring prior to the start of the season, and then it may pan out that the team wasn't as good as you thought the team would be. But that's just part of it. It really is. And what I'm finding is that by and large, and certainly you have outliers, you have circumstances from year to year, but by and large, it works out. And so my advice is that schools have to really make scheduling a priority and developing those relationships with their coaching colleagues is really important. And certainly ADs having relationships as well to do everything a school can possibly do to make those games happen, because it's very important.
Following up on that, Chris, in addition to Bradley and Western Michigan, you've worked at a ton of big schools as well. Do you see big school versus non-big school? Is it just like a little difference, or is it like a whole world apart in your opinion?
In terms of the talent, I think you saw it in this past year's NCAA tournament with St. Peter's. But the difference is very razor thin. It's thinner than what people think. And so sometimes when you have a team such as a St. Peter's, let's say they have some upperclassmen playing against a Power Five school that may have more freshmen on the court than not, if that experience counts for a lot. And so I would say the difference isn't as great as people think. And what I will say about young people today, they don't really care about the name on the front of the jersey. Maybe different than what was in the past. These young people, they grew up playing against each other through AAU teams, and they're playing around the country in high school. They get to know each other, they're friends. And so I would say the differences aren't as great as people would think.
I want to throw a term out there that we hear, I think, more on TV maybe than ever from any committee members, and that's the old term eye test. Is there really any type of eye test used in the committee room when you're selecting teams, or is it really the resumes and the metrics and the like?
Yeah, we don't use that term at all.
Good.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, we look at the resumes and the metrics, and we evaluate that. But that's a term, you know, similar to the term that was made up mid-major. We don't use that term either.
Good.
You know, there's schools that play basketball, and we evaluate each school based upon the results they're able to achieve during the course of a year.
One of the things we're seeing more and more of is, especially with the expansion of the schedule, the number of non-D1 opponents. Are those even look? I mean, they land in such a spot on the team sheet that you wouldn't even notice them. I just kind of wanted to get it on record that if you're trying to build a tournament resume, that is not the way to do it. Am I right in saying that?
I would say the answer to that question is certainly it's something that would come up in a conversation if a team has multiple non-Division I teams, particularly if it comes down to the end and their resume is compared to another school's resume. You certainly look at a school that passed on an opportunity to schedule a quality game. And so if it comes down between one school that took advantage of the opportunity versus one school that didn't, then certainly that's something that's going to be a topic of conversation.
That is interesting.
I'd read that the Division I Transformation Committee has discussed allowing up to 25% of a sports teams to qualify for their postseason tournament. So while I know you don't have a crystal ball, do you think we're going to see a bracket in the near future with 70 or 72 or 90 teams in it?
Yeah, I understand the Transformation Committee has brought that topic up. And I'd say as a law school graduate, the day I graduated from law school is probably the day I stopped answering hypothetical questions.
Yeah.
And so, I know it's, and you know what, that conversation, this isn't new, right? We've been talking, there's been conversations about this in the media, you know, for decades, literally, about expanding the team field to several more teams than what it currently exists. So this isn't a new topic. And so it's just something that's been around for a long time, and we'll just see how the conversation goes with the Transformation Committee.
Yeah. Let me ask you sort of a similar, something about the first four, and I need to clarify, this is not a knock on the University of Dayton. I think they do a fantastic job hosting that event. If you've ever been a part of that event, it is you find out on Sunday that you're playing in Dayton on Tuesday. You have to get from where you are to Dayton, and then from Dayton to, if you win the game, to your next city. Having worked in athletics, you might be able to relate to this. I think most coaches, players, and even fans would rather play two games in 2 days at one place than two games in 3 or 4 days when you're zigzagging across the country. Would they ever entertain the idea of having those games at the sites they play into rather than in Dayton or a first four site?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I certainly understand the question, but it's nothing that the committee has discussed to date.
Okay.
Chris, you are a member of the MBC. There's been a lot of change for your conference this season. Loyola is out, Belmont, Murray State, and UIC are in. What impact do you think all of that transformation is going to have either on the conference or on your school specifically?
We'll see. You know, I don't know. And it'll be interesting. But certainly from our perspective at Bradley, and as you all know, as a committee member, I never speak from my perspective as an AD at Bradley, but certainly just as a committee member. But since you asked the question, it just remains to be seen. We'll see how it shakes out. We're really pleased with the additions to the league and certainly wish Loyola the absolute best.
Yeah, so David, yet?
Okay. Let me see. I think I've kind of hit on most of the high points that I had, but like, you know, attempting to schedule 91 games. Going down my checklist, I kind of asked most. Oh, okay. This is sort of similar. You touched on this already, Chris, but when you look at a resume, do you look at more than just the opponent? Because you can look at opponents and results, but I think that a big factor in college basketball is where a game is played. I think it's harder to win on the road in basketball than in any other sport, because while the fans are with you, the familiarity of a home venue is also with you. Even the sight lines, the shooting lanes, the floor, the rims. So do you value, like, even if a team might not be a tournament caliber team, if they've won all but one or two of their home games, do you give a lot of credit for somebody that goes in there and beats them?
Yeah, I think back to what I mentioned earlier, you know, I think that's why you have 12 committee members, 12 minds. And certainly, you know, there are the quad tiers, you know, quad 1, 2, 3, 4. And so whether you play home, road, or neutral site, the system really factors all that in. And you get credit for playing on the road. And what would be a quad 2 game on the road, you know, might be different elsewhere. And so I just think that I love what we have in place as relates to being able to count for teams that do win on the road. You know, I think it depends on the committee member and how they view that. Certainly those conversations are had in the room, but it's a really good question. I think that as relates to a resume, for example, of a team that could only win at home, but really had a challenging time on the road consistently throughout the year, certainly that would be a topic of the conversation as well by a committee member based upon their observation and then their evaluation of that team. You know, certainly could lead to them reaching certain conclusions as it relates to where they value that team.
You're a member of the NCAA transfer working group. We've seen like thousands of guys enter the portal in the years past. Do you think it's out of control? Do you think the system is working properly? Do you think we need to make changes to the transfer situation?
Yeah, I think that's a question. I think if you talk to 10 people, you might get 10 different answers.
Or 20.
Right. And so the way I look at the process and where we are in college basketball and in all college sports from that perspective, in terms of student athletes being able to transfer without doing a year in residence, I will say that this is a system that we have. And whether we like it, whether we don't like it, it really doesn't matter how we feel about it. Right. This is what we have. And so my advice or what I communicate is that we just have to do our best to manage the current landscape and do everything we can as athletic directors to put our programs and coaches in a position where they can be successful. But certainly how a person feels about it, their take on it, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. And I think also what we try to do is what's best for the student athletes. And so I think we just handle ourselves accordingly and keep moving forward.
You mentioned the current landscape. One thing that is new that wasn't in the past landscape, even a couple of years ago, is NIL collectives. I don't know how much you're allowed to talk about them. I assume it's okay because it's not anything that impacts seating or anything, but are you worried that you talked previously about the gap between a team like St. Peter's and the Big Boys is not that big, but are you worried that NIL is going to make it bigger because a good player at St. Peter's might get offered like six figures to go to a big school or something?
Yeah, it's nothing that as a committee we've ever even talked about or even thought about. You know, I just think that we just operate based upon the way we always have been. And looking forward to November 7th, evaluating teams and things of that nature. But to answer your question directly, items such as NIL, just it never comes up in our conversations. And I would tell you if it did, it doesn't.
Right. And I believe you when you say it doesn't. It's just that when you're watching television, especially when you see the final bracket on Selection Sunday, somebody will always like there's 361 teams. You select 68. The math is against you. That is roughly 293 that are not happy, if my math is correct. And there's always somebody pontificating about what it was the biggest miscarriage of justice in history that this team was not selected to where another one was. There is so much data, and I know that there's always been a lot of data available, but like, is the net, has that, I know it hasn't changed the process, but I think you were a committee during both. Do you think that that's a better sorting tool? Has it made it easier or harder, or really no difference because you're still sort of doing your own evaluations and assessments as a committee member?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is all true. You know, I think the net is an improvement. I really do. And and it is just a sorting tool. It's one tool of many. But I do think it's better. I think it's an enhancement. And I believe we're in a really good place as it relates to the NCAA basketball tournament, the way the tournament is bracketed, seeded, the way teams are selected. And so we're really feel fortunate to be a part of this process at this time and just really excited about November 7th and getting this thing started.
Yeah.
My only question remaining, Chris, I know we've lost a lot of great coaches this year, like Krzyzewski and Jay Wright. What is it like to play point guard for Bob Knight?
It was fantastic. And there are certain things that resonate every single day from my experience 30 years ago that I apply on a daily basis, you know, hard work. And it's no different than any other student athlete, my experience, but the hard work, being able to work together as a team, the shared experiences, the discipline, being able to compete are certain things that you just never forget. They're instilled within you and really had a terrific experience at Indiana and really enjoyed my time.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Well, I was going to say one of the criticisms that I've heard Bob Knight say before, and it is, I kind of understand it, was that there were a lot of non-basketball quote unquote people on the committee. Do you feel that like your experience as a player gives you a different perspective, a better perspective when you're evaluating the values of wins and losses and resumes than somebody that may have only worked as an administrator or not, or does it even come into play at all?
I would say a different perspective, but I wouldn't say a better perspective. And that's not being PC or being nice. It, you know, we have some committee members that didn't play college basketball, but their opinions and their thoughts are very well thought out. And I really appreciate the perspective that they bring. And so I wouldn't say that it's better to have had a basketball playing experience. It's just different. And but I certainly value mine, and it certainly helps me, you know, as I evaluate things, but I'm sure other committee members, they've had experiences that they lean on. And maybe they didn't actually play, but maybe they spend time with college basketball in another way, shape, or form that helps them. And it's something that they lean on. And so I would just say it's just been different. And then I will say this, and I don't say this just because I'm supposed to or should, but the experience I had in Indiana, I mean, that was 30 years ago. A long time ago, right?
Right.
And I've been other places, and I've mentioned a few of them, and I've enjoyed those experiences as well. And so I've had a robust experience at a number of schools, Power Five schools and the like. And so I really enjoy the experiences that I've had because they've been so varied: public school, private school, Power Five school, non-Power Five school. And so I've seen it at every angle and level possible in college athletics.
Yeah, Chris, you've been on the committee now for several years, but this year you are now the chairman. Can you just give us an idea of how much more responsibility you have now being the chairman versus just a committee member?
Well, I would say if I was not the chair, I wouldn't be talking to you guys right now. So that's one of the things. Just the other additional responsibilities and obligations. First, the media, which I enjoy, and being able to talk with you guys. And then we'll go back to Houston as a committee in a couple weeks. But I was there this past December when they had their press conference to really announce publicly that the Final Four is on its way. And so I went down there with Danny Gavitt and had a really good time with the local organizing committee, the mayor of Houston, and those folks are just really fired up and excited about the Final Four coming to town. But I would say being a chair has afforded me experiences and opportunities such as that, and certainly to lead the discussion and lead the meetings that we have leading up to the selection, bracketing, and seeding of the teams in March.
Yeah. It, one of the things I always say every year is that one of the ways that I think to improve the process is just to have me personally take the whole thing over. I'm just throwing that out again as an option if you all want to do that.
I really appreciate that. And as you might imagine, I get a lot of good advice. And so I'll certainly file that one away as well. Yeah.
Good advice. Okay. Not just advice. Good advice.
Absolutely.
I get a lot of advice in general. Some of it's good.
Terrific advice, yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, we want to thank you again for taking this chance to speak to us. We really do appreciate it. I know you've got a very busy schedule there, so we'll let you get back to your day. But we do appreciate you coming in and joining us here for this chat today. And wish you the best of luck throughout the season and throughout the selection process.
Well, thank you for your time, guys. I really appreciate talking with you all.
Thanks a lot. And on behalf of John Titel, David Griggs as well, our very special guest, Chris Reynolds, Athletic Director at Bradley and Chairman of the Men's Basketball Committee for this upcoming season, I'm Chad Sherwood. We'll talk to you again real soon.